This is the Disaster Recovery Hour. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
Dad, good morning. It's Saturday. It's a little after 7 a.m. Tuned into AM 970 The Apple of Talking New York. My name is Chris Plunkett. I'm your host for the Disaster Recovery Hour. We come in every Saturday, just about this time every Saturday. On the show, we talk about preparedness for disasters and emergencies in your lives. And we've kind of expanded the program and the parameters of larger scales and of disasters, I should say. And in the last couple of weeks, it's been generating around the Haiti, because Haiti is so close. We have a very large Haitian community in the country. They're part of the workforce, being citizens and such. So we're gonna continue with that, because we're going with some updates from a previous guest and a new guest who's a representative of Little Paul and Big Paul. I'm sure everybody knows who they are. But before we get to that, I just want to thank my guest from last week, Dr. Arthur Roberts. He's the director and founder of the Living Heart Foundation, along with Project Hope. That's another disaster. The disaster encompasses a lot of things. What we're seeing in this country, and what he's informing us about, is about the future of the obesity and the diabetes and cardiovascular issues that are coming down the turnpike, since we're in the metropolitan New Jersey area, I'll say the turnpike. And there's the awareness. It's a living, breathing foundation, and they got a lot of traction. These organizations are equal partners in running the Heroes for Health Hope program, and they're down in Dallas as we speak. The Super Bowl is down in Dallas, and they're going to be in the forefront of bringing awareness, because diabetes percentage-wise runs pretty rampant with retired professional football players. So with that said, they have the endorsements of the NFL and the NFL Players Association. Again, the show is about disasters and property, and how I can give you the tools and tips of having something that does happen, and the further damage that could happen if you don't address certain situations. But again, the disaster encompasses many things. Like I said, now, so we had the doctor on last week, and we're going to move into our show rather quickly, because there's a lot that we're going to be discussing. Getting an update from our previous guests and what's happening down in Haiti, because it just seems like every other day there's just some new tragedy that's happening down there, some new disaster, if you will. And my guest today is a returning guest. It's Tim Falconer from Way Place Foundation. And also my other guest is Nancy Murdoch. Nancy's the director for MMRC. That's Little Paul and Big Paul's organization. MMRC stands for Materials Management Relief Corp. They formed their own nonprofit because these two guys wanted to make things happen instead of waiting around for red tape and signatures and stamps and what like that. I can't say it on the air, but no kind of guys. They see a problem, they problem solve. They're not waiting for marching orders. They go ahead and do it. Tim, Nancy, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
So, Tim, you just got back. You and I spoke the other day. You just got back. And if you hadn't listened to Tim's show, you can catch it on the pod site, the podcast that's on my website, cppems.com. Tim is the founder of Wave Place Foundation, and it's they're assisting in schools and laptops. And, well, you know what, Tim, why don't you give a quick background, and then we'll talk about your experience that you just had.
Okay. Our main thing is to use laptops as educational tools, not for the sorts of things that adults use laptops for, but as a way for younger children, elementary age children, to learn things like math and science and creative problem solving in a way that gets them excited about their own education, which in a place like Haiti is extremely valuable, because traditionally it has a very rote memorization, strict discipline teaching culture. And so our long-term goal is to help the children of Haiti be, roll up your sleeves, solve our own problems kind of people. And so that's what we're doing down there, using these low-cost laptops.
Yeah. So now you just got back, and I experienced the other day, I did a Skype with Tim and Bill Moretti's, the producer of the program here. It was my first time. I thought it was just amazing that the technology that we have out there. I guess I'm in the dark ages. I'm still dealing with remote controls for the cable company. But so, Tim, you got back. You were eating lunch when we were having our talk. Well, let's talk about when you hit the ground and your objective for your trip. I know you had the computers down there, so why don't you roll with it? Go with it. Tell us what happened.
Sure. It was a really, really great trip. I was down there for 2 weeks, and this time I drove myself, which was a real experience, particularly in Port-au-Prince. For anybody that is stuck in traffic or complaining about traffic, I'd have you drive in Port-au-Prince for a while. It's a real eye-opener, new traffic patterns. But we went and we visited our existing pilots along the southern peninsula. In the second week, I spent most of the time in Port-au-Prince, and all in all, I visited 20 schools and met with 18 organizations in just 2 weeks, and which, you know, was probably about double what we expected to do. The interest was so high.
So with the traffic, what are the conditions for traffic? I mean, is it because there's debris and garbage, and what it takes you all day, all night? How is it getting around? Besides traffic, is it normal besides the traffic, or what happens?
Port-au-Prince is a real mess. There's no doubt about it. I mean, Port-au-Prince was kind of a mess before the earthquake, but particularly now, everything is overcrowding from the sidewalks. There are tents everywhere. I mean, when you're driving on the Route 2, there's tents right in the median, and very, very packed tents. So you can tell that, you know, you're talking about five or six people in a small tent that, you know, and then there's, you know, concrete trucks and everything else going right by, like, you know, 1 foot away from where people are living. And then, of course, garbage. Garbage is real. It's a real problem. It's just everywhere. And it makes you, you know, just as you go through, it makes you feel bad, especially, from what I've seen, Haitians are very proud of their appearance. They're always, dressed cleanly. All of the kids, when they go to school, they're in nice uniforms. And so you see everybody walking through these conditions. And the contrast is just very striking, between the rubble and the garbage, and then people just kind of living their lives in this real mess.
Yeah, you know, the Wave Place has the tell me if I'm wrong, what I understand, what you've educated me on, it's about educating the children, because, you know, those are our future leaders, and just like in our country, you know, the education, we spend a lot of money on a lot of things. But, you know, I think the education system in our country is obviously the best in the world. But, you know, we have things to learn. We can always make things better. Is it a similar type of thing down there? The structure and the format? Or is it a school runs independently from a school, you know, half a mile or a mile away?
Well, the conditions in Haiti are very fragmented. I mean, you know, the government-run schools account for a very small percentage, about 15% of the total schools. The rest of the schools are run by NGOs and, both Haitian NGOs and outside NGOs.
Non-governmental organizations and NGO, right?
Correct. Yeah. Right, sorry. And then of all the children that go to school, a very small percentage, like something like 5% ever graduate from high school, what we would consider high school. So when you say education in Haiti, it is it's a completely different thing. And for the schools that, you know, for the children that are going to school every day, particularly the younger children, they are often forced to learn in French, which they don't speak at home. So understanding is severely compromised. And also it tends to be very much rote memorization with teachers that have no more training than the grade that they're teaching themselves.
Yeah.
So it's really a difficult situation, and in my opinion, it has a big impact on you know, just the conditions of Haiti.
Yeah. If you just joined us, it's the Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. My guests today are Tim Falconer from Way Place Foundation and Nancy Murdoch, who is the director of the MMRC. So now you talked about the different schools that you went to. Now, is it is there like a director per school, or is it like here in the States, you know, there's a superintendent for a district? So is it one point person, or there's each school you have to meet an individual?
It varies. Yes, there's usually a director, and those are usually the people that I meet with. And now with the government schools, then they have more of a layered hierarchy, as you would expect, like here.
Yeah. So we want to get Nancy involved, because Nancy is in constant contact with Little Paul and Big Paul. You know, Little Paul and Big Paul are still doing the triage, doing the emergency services of EMTs and transportation of the unfortunate ill that are down there with the cholera outbreak. Nancy, I got your email a couple days ago, and we were just kind of trying to encapsulate it. We're going to go to Nancy. I want you to
Hi.
How you doing? I just want you to expand on that. And we're going to go to a break, but and also Tim, I want you to talk about, because I know you were trying to hook up with Little Paul and Big Paul. So after the break, we'll jump right into that in the deep end. And again, this is a Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett, AM 970 The Apple. Every Saturday at 7 and change, between 7 and 8. Like I said, let's do a break, pay some bills, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, on AM 970, The Apple. And now back to the Disaster Recovery Hour on AM 970, The Apple. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
Back from the break. Like I said, we always got to pay the bills around here. And my guest today is Nancy Murdoch. She's a director for MMRC, which Little Paul and Big Paul founded while they were down on the ground in Haiti, and also the founder of Wave Place Foundation. And I appreciate you guys coming on the show. So, Nancy, let's get an update on Little Paul and Big Paul and what's happening with them of late. And, Tim, I also know you had some contact with them, and also you've had some issues releasing the laptops with your driving force of educating those Haitian children. So, Nancy, let's get an update.
Yeah, well, after they were on the show, I believe it was late October, but within a few days or less than a week, they received an emergency request from Northwest Haiti Christian Mission. That they had two children die of cholera that morning, and they were desperately low on supplies, and it was looking very, very bad up there. So even though 95% of our efforts have always been focused in Port-au-Prince, because there's been more than enough for us to do there, BP and LP just looked at each other, and we're always short of donations, but they used $2,400 to charter an airplane and be up there within 24 hours with lots and lots of supplies. They were joined by Grassroots United and Medical Teams International.
Is that an NGO?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And within, they started to work. Their plan was 10, 12-hour shifts, and it immediately turned into 18 to 24-hour shifts as these poor people from the mountains, they walk 4, 6, 8 hours with cholera. They're brought in by their families on wheelbarrows, donkeys, everything. Many die on the way. They make it to the clinic, and it's been a constant struggle to get supplies and constant struggle to get medical personnel. And they've literally spent the last 10 days there in that kind of environment. The floor is constantly wet and sticky from vomit, diarrhea, bleach. They don't have the proper supplies. They don't have enough body bags. They're very lucky. They're very good. They have a lot of, the team that's there knows what they're doing. Mm-hmm. They lose between 0 and 11 people a day. And those are human lives that they're losing. Those are sisters and mothers and brothers and very, very young children that are dying most often because they're already malnourished and they just don't have any kind of system to fight cholera despite the IV. They don't have enough body bags, so they have to deal with the dead and, with washing the bodies with 2% bleach solution and putting bleach rags in all the orifices and and they do this 24 hours a day, and then they're lucky if they get 5-6 hours of sleep, and then they're back at it.
Yeah. Next couple of weeks, we're going to revisit the Katrina situation and how the lessons that were learned from there and what's been implemented for down there. I mean, it's not as dire, obviously, because we're having death happen in Haiti. You know, I read some of the updates from BP regarding people dying. And so, you know, with the supplies, there was on a newscast this past Sunday night, they featured something happening in Haiti and regarding supplies just sitting on the docks in containers. Now, Tim, you have firsthand experience of this, right?
Yes. Yes. Our laptops are still waiting in customs right now. And which is longer than we had to wait in the previous last time. Double the laptops. It was in March. It didn't take as long.
Now, was it? I mean, the other program was talking about you know, is it dollars? Is it crossing your T's, dotting your I's? What have you seen? The cause or the root to that problem?
Well, we did it a little differently. Last time we sent to an NGO that was new and hadn't got its Haitian NGO status yet. And so there was a lot of hassle, and we had people going down there every day. And I guess ultimately, you know, somebody knew somebody, and it got through. Now, this time we tried sending to an established Haitian NGO down there in hopes of getting that problem, and it acted up to a backfired. And from what I hear, their paperwork isn't in order, and so I don't really know exactly what the situation is, you know, really. But we're at this workshop in a couple of weeks now, and we might have to put it off until January if we can't get some action soon.
Yeah. So Tim's got actual stuff that he shipped down there, and it's part of the program, part of his protocol, and physically need the computer still to execute those plans, right, Tim?
Right. So, you know, and I was just on the phone an hour ago with somebody down there, and we were discussing whether or not to do the, you know, the December workshop in January instead because of this. You know, I mean, there's lots of different ways you can get stuff into the country, and, you know, this time we tried to go through the proper channels, and so we'll see.
Yeah, so Nance, regarding the outbreak, there was a report something that the UN was could have been involved with that. Is that a report that?
Well, what I'm seeing from different online media, you know, when you look at the blogs and the Twitter, which can be, you know, actually live. There's a lot of photographs going on and talk that it was the Nepalese contingent of the UN that emptied their latrine tanks into the river.
Really?
So that was, you know, widely speculated that that's what caused cholera. The UN launched an investigation within the last week, and it's widely expected that that will be confirmed. And we're already seeing huge, huge protests against the UN, particularly in Cap Haitian. It's all the airports are closed in Cap Haitian. You can't get in or out. They've also barricaded all of the roads, the protesters have, and you see from a lot of the journalists, they're taking motorcycles. They can't get trucks through, and they're paying large bribes, either in cash or gas, to even get into Cap Haitian. Mm. I did speak to a student, an American student, yesterday. He is in Cap Haitian. He is white, he's American, and he feels safe. He said that while the protest is going on, there's burning tires, there's been some gunfire, there's been some deaths. It is strictly politically orientated, and it is targeted at the UN. And as a white American or an NGO worker, he feels safe. So there was just a lot of worry today that when the announcement came out, because they're already gathered in Port-au-Prince downtown doing a peaceful protest, that it would turn violent and, you know, the entire country could flare up in violence, which is horrible unto itself. But what it does is it blocks the medical supply routes and
right
in the middle of a cholera outbreak.
Yeah, it's almost cutting your nose about your face kind of thing. If you wanted to follow us, you can do twitter.com/DRH radio. we're gonna go to a break in a few minutes. But so again, it's that logjam of supplies. I mean, there seems to be tons and millions and tons of supplies that are just not being dispersed because
Well, there's a couple of issues. I mean, I think we know we saw it on the program on Sunday night, which we know what it was. There are mountains and mountains and mountains of supplies, including Tim's laptops in customs. That's an issue I don't understand, because that's the actual Haitian government. That's no NGO. That's not Clinton. That's not the UN. That's the Haitian government that's not letting those supplies in for their own people. But then after that, you know, when Tim talked about the traffic in Port-au-Prince and the supply routes and everything, who is going to drive it around?
Right.
You know, it's not like here where you can just phone a trucking company and get an 18-wheeler for X thousand dollars and bring it to you. It just doesn't work like that. And that's where MMRC stepped up with our Toyota, you know, and we drive stuff around. And we drive stuff around almost 24 hours a day.
Well, bless you. I can't even imagine. I just spent 1 week in Port-au-Prince traffic. So
well, the next time, Nance, we're gonna coordinate that Skype and get a live feed and talk to the guys. We're gonna go to a break. Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, on AM 970, The Apple. And now back to the Disaster Recovery Hour on AM 970, The Apple. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
This is the Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett, AM 970, The Apple, the Talk of New York. We are still talking about something that's really right in the forefront of the news, and it's entered my life a month ago. Thank God for the internet and Twitter, because I came across, mutually we came across each other, was Little Paul and Big Paul. Doing the work that for their fellow man just absolutely blew my mind, and it's opened up in a positive way for me to look at humanitarian nonprofits. There's a lot of good out there, and since you know it doesn't sell papers, doesn't get you on the evening news to do the right thing, which is a shame. I think that's my opinion. It's my show, my opinion, so I guess I can do that. My guest today is Nancy Murdoch. She's a director of MMRC. It's a nonprofit. The founders are down Little Paul and Big Paul down in Haiti right now, experiencing things that are not reported. Tell me if I'm wrong, guys. We're not seeing what they're seeing on a daily basis through the news. And also with Tim Falconer from Wave Place Foundation, there's two spectrums here. What MMRC is doing is the physical triage of a country that is besides Mother Nature. They're having a breakdown because things are not getting moving in the right direction on governmental services. And then we have the future of with Tim trying to implement the education of children. Because Tim has brought up some very stark numbers of only 5% are getting even through to the high school level of graduation. Nancy, where you know, Little Paul and Big Paul gave me what they were thinking. That was a month ago. What they were thinking, where the future was going to go. Now it's a month later. What is their take? Again, we're gonna have them an update live. I don't know, maybe next week or the week after. But what's their feeling and where are they moving to?
Where are the boys going next?
Well, not as in, you know, more of where's the movement of we physically we want to build, or are we still doing a medical triage of just because of the cholera outbreak? We can't
as
even...
long as cholera is it, as long as the hospitals cannot treat and contain the cholera, we will supply them with medical, and we will supply, you know, smaller clinics will spring up. And they will need IV oral rehydration salt. There are specific things required for cholera, mm-hmm. And cholera is an extremely treatable disease if you can, or an infection, if you can get treatment within the first few hours, because it can very easily kill within 4 to 12 hours.
Now, we did put up the list of supplies that Paul had put out for the people really in Haiti to come up with, and we we posted on a website, I guess maybe a little too quickly, but I don't think
so. Well, it's not that. It's that, you know, like Tim's finding with his shipment, is very difficult to get supplies into Haiti and actually into the hands of the people. So any shipment that came to us would be absolutely and totally welcome, but it would have to take a very high level of coordination. It would take, you know, we need 3,000 to 5,000 pounds of those supplies, and they need to come in a container, and they have to come specifically through a specific person in Miami. And you know, we have extremely sensitive channels to get information, to get supplies to us. So I guess it was just that the listeners, you know, they can't say, you know, I'm going to buy you $500 of oral rehydration salts and send it. It can't work like that.
Well, my a fellow countryman of yours, Katie McKenna from PTTV, the documentary of web company, she, one of her takes was that, you know, and it makes perfect sense. There's a lot of NGOs down there, but you actually do need somebody to coordinate, and instead of double servicing, or, you know, there's so much stuff and help and materials that are not being directed in the right area because it's not being known. Okay, someone's going to do this, then the next person says, well, we'll do that also with you. And then it just kind of compounds. It's like what she was saying about, you know, people wanted to help, and they wind up showing up at these disasters in other countries, or even in our area, in our country, and what they become a casualty. They become a hindrance to helping, because then they're not prepared to do what needs to be done. They can't even take care of themselves. Never mind, you know, humanitarian need. So they become not an asset but a liability. And that's what Little Paul and Big Paul were kind of referencing too. So Tim, with the future of WavePlace, it's the education, but physically they need to build buildings too, right?
Well, I mean, buildings are less necessary for the kind of work that we do. I mean, you know, we had a lot of our pilots just outside after the earthquake in Laogan because there was no place to meet. For us, it's about finding partners that have experience in Haiti to help things grow. I mean, I met with 18 different organizations, and we're proceeding in December, possibly, but if not January, we're going to start, I think, 5 pilots with organizations such as JPHRO, the Sean Penn Organization, a Restivic group, basically child slavery advocates, and as well as this one group, AMURT, who's doing some really, really great progressive work with child safety zones, and they've been working in the middle of Port-au-Prince for a while now. And so it's finding those people that already have the right spirit, that have funding, that can make things sustainable, and then working with them to kind of get things going for the long term, so that people can see that these approaches are working. And get inspired, and then it can grow.
Now, when you're doing that and you're talking to these people, is there a way where it can almost be like a conference, or it's still driving to one spot and telling them this is what needs to be done, and going to the next spot?
Well, we have our workshops. We bring together, like, you know, all of the mentors from like up to 5 different organizations at a time, and. So that's one of the things, one of the big problems is that you really need to have more communication between all the NGOs. I mean, we met with UNICEF, and they do have, the UN does have these cluster meetings, you know, which is supposed to address these concerns, trying to get the NGOs to talk to each other. But there's just so many people are working across purposes down there, and I think a lot of these issues could really help if more people talk to each other.
Yeah, is it... what they said about some of our law enforcement agencies would do, which work so well together, but also could, and not everyone's talking, but nobody's listening. Is that happening down there?
Well, all right. One person characterized it as the big NGOs have a requirement to announce to everyone what they are doing. So the cluster meetings are essentially just like, you know, like an hour of people announcing stuff and not, you know, like actually rolling up your sleeves and saying, hey, you're doing this, I'm doing this. Hey, why don't we, you know, share a ride or whatever kinds of, you know, things you could get by cooperating.
I mean, I always equate those things to really a ball club, you know, football, baseball, whatever. You know, every position has its tasks to perform, you know, a tackle or a guard or a center. Everybody's got something to do to make the, you know, the end result is a score, right? So it seems that that really isn't happening. There's too many quarterbacks or too many people want the ball.
And too many people want credit.
So, Nancy, what is this similar to your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, we operate on such a small bare-bones level, and one of the reasons that I joined MMRC is because they get things done. There's no meetings. There's no bureaucracy. Nobody has to fill out a form to get our assistance. If you call us and you need help and you're not charging the Haitian people, we will help you. You know, whether it's in a bad part of town, in the middle of the night, in a storm, we will do anything to get oxygen or blood or anything to anybody that requires it. And, you know, that's what we were doing in Port-au-Prince, and we were doing it very successfully. There's lots of articles and pictures on our website of, you know, EMS services transferring pregnant women, emergency C-sections, horrible car accidents. There's a lot of graphic images. And we are using our Toyota pickup as an ambulance.
That's amazing.
And so we don't have a lot of time for cluster meetings, whether that's right or wrong,
mm-hmm.
or we're not invited. we're just out doing it. And
yeah.
We don't have any choice but to communicate with others.
That sounds
we
like,
have to
yeah.
reach out. If somebody needs blood, I mean, we don't have blood. We have to go find it.
Yeah, right.
So we will go from one organization to another and help them swap supplies.
Tim's at that stage too. I mean, where you're able to just go do it,
and a lot of the organizations that I met with, I mean, they have the same kind of a roll up your sleeves and just do it kind of approach. I mean, we did meet with Save the Children and some of the other larger ones, and there's a difference. There's a real difference in attitude and temperament. With the small ones, like, you know, I would take MMRC to be, and, you know, AMRT and others that are just not messing around with logistics and yapping.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, a lot of it comes down to donors. I mean, you have to be responsible to your donors, and that's when we talk about the cluster meetings and making the announcement. And, you know, 10 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, we were bankrupt. BP was in New York. He was in studio with you, Chris.
Yeah.
And we weren't going to make it. It was just, we were done. And we ended up with an extremely generous corporate donor from the U.S.
Really?
I mean, people say things
That's
about
right.
U.S. corporations and greed, but this is beyond. Garden Fresh Salsa, the CEO, Jack Aronson, stepped up for us like we cannot believe. He replaced our broken vehicle. He's personally organizing a 3,000-pound shipment of medical supplies to us. He visited us in Haiti. He mopped floors. He carried boxes. He's made a huge personal and corporate financial contribution. And that was extremely lucky for us because while we're responsible to him, it's not like we have this large group of donors and you know, there's like a big forms that we have to fill out.
Right.
Just check with Jack.
I hope the show did a service to BP and Little P. You know, you can go to my website cppems.com, and there's the banners for Wave Place Foundation, also MMRC, and you can get all this stuff. You know, for if you want to donate, even I don't know, Nancy, maybe you guys could use some administrative help or Tim. You know,
actually, to be honest, what we really need right now is an accountant. We are we have pro bono lawyers. We're incorporated in the state of California, but to secure our 501c3 finalization, mm-hmm. we need an accountant.
All right, you know what we'll do? Let's you know, we'll go to the break. And we'll do the next portion, and we'll talk about what are those things that you do need, and administratively wise, and if not, I know we need supplies, but we have some issues getting things across. This is the Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. We're going to go to a break and see you in a second.
You're listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, on AM 970, The Apple. When disaster comes into your life and attacks your property, you need answers. CPP is the answer. CPP is a full-service emergency services and restoration company with 20 years' experience in emergency management and restoration. Our seasoned team of skilled professionals is ready to assess damages and restore your property to its pre-loss condition. Who do I call first? What about insurance? Is it safe to stay here? What do I do next? Fire, smoke, water, or mold? CPP restores your property and your peace of mind. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration. We've got answers. For more information, visit us on the web at www.cppems.com or give us a call at 201-483-8953. That's 201-483-8953. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration, servicing the New York Metro and Tri-State area. And now back to the Disaster Recovery Hour on AM 970, The Apple. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
And we're back. This is a Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. If you just tuned in, you are late. There'll be some punishments and some whippings later on. I'm with Tim Falconer from Wave Place Foundation, and I'm also with the director of MMRC. So, Nance, tell me, how did you meet LP and BP?
Well, I read the Men's Journal article.
Oh, yeah, it was a good one.
Yeah, it was, and it moved me. I spent some time in Nigeria, and I always thought that if I volunteered, it would be for an African country, and there was just something that about BP and LP. I had to pick up the phone, and my background is in web design and social media, and they were in quite need of that at the time. And I phoned BP. He was in New York. And within 24 hours, we had a new website and a social media strategy. And we were out of the gates. And, you know, I know I was offering a service, but it meant so much to me that he welcomed me as part of the team so quickly.
Yeah, that's I felt, you know, when they were here in the studio and I was talking to them and they said thanks. And I'm like, you know, I kind of felt silly accepting a thank you from them.
Well,
they do so many things.
Thank me too, and I asked them to stop. I said, you know, thank each other every morning. I can't even.
Yeah. And then Tim goes down, leaves his family, and but that's the, you know, and that when I read that article, it was the, what was it titled, the Haitian Cowboys, right? EMT Haitian Cowboys or something?
Haiti's Cowboys.
Haiti's EMT. Cowboys, yeah.
Unbelievable. It's amazing. I mean, you know, just coming back from 2 weeks down there, you keep meeting people who are doing amazing things. It really is. I don't know. I mean, you literally just keep this person meets this person meets this person very quickly down there.
If you want anything to get done.
Yeah, and everybody's introducing you to somebody else that they've met, and it really is. It was quite an experience. All the great people are doing great work.
Well, I met a very good friend of mine and downtown in the towers. I worked for a company that does nothing but a disaster recovery and emergency services for property and things like that. So when the towers went down. I was in line waiting to get my badge. We were in the I think it was the FBI tent or something like that, where you go in, you give them your IDs and all the rest of that, and they give you your badge to walk around in the zone and you know can do your business. And I met a guy who actually worked for the same company. He was just behind me, and I had no idea. And we wound up becoming fast friends for since then. It was gratifying to really help out my fellow New Yorkers, New Jerseyans, or whatever metropolitan people. So, with that said, there's there's still lots of work to be done. I'm sure there's a wish list for things that need to be that you guys would like to obtain. Whether that I don't know what that is. So, Nancy, let me start with you. What's on your wish list to assist with Paul and little Paul down there?
Well, you know, we will get through this cholera outbreak. We will. So in terms of critical medical supplies, that's being managed. Just like Tim, we want to build a future for Haitian children. And we have two projects right now. One is an orphanage that's in quite desperate need. And over the 6 months, we'll be focusing on that with Garden Fresh Salsa on bringing education, healthcare, proper structure, everything we can, clothing, to that orphanage. And then we have a much larger long-term project to build an entire village, you know, with clean water and sustainable, with a tilapia pond and a garden. And all of that takes supplies. It takes construction supplies. It takes paper supplies, school supplies, clothing supplies. So it's really, if you just want to reach out to mmrcglobal.org, if you want to be part of that and, you know, work towards doing this, and, you know, we can try to facilitate larger containers coming through to make it more efficient. Because it is important to cure cholera. But like Tim, if you don't have a future, you know, we have to keep focused on the long term.
So that would wish list also applies to you, Tim. What do you think?
Well, I have a very specific wish list coming out of all of these meetings. Our goal by next summer is to have to train a total of 106 Haitian mentors to do the work that we're doing, and to find money to pay them for a year. And also to get working in 20 locations in Haiti. We're in 7 locations right now, so we're actually 4 locations, but 7 pilots. So, you know, and this, we've done 18 of these things. We know how much it costs. We know what it's going to cost to pay people. So right now we're just fundraising for $300,000, and we could do what I just said. You know, half of that goes to paying Haitians directly, 106 Haitians for a year, for $150,000. And then the rest of it is for materials development, courseware development, assessment, and training and support. And so that's what, you know, we're trying to link up with organizations that have similar goals and see if they can help us get us to that 300,000 mark. And that's all program costs, by the way.
Now, is the Wave Place Foundation and what you guys want to accomplish, are there other NGOs who just focus on the future and education?
Oh, sure, of course.
There's
NGOs that also focus on, you know, like that is a big part of themselves. Like, for example, you know, UNICEF and Save the Children and so forth. They're very much into, you know, helping the schools and so forth.
If you just tuned in, we're a couple minutes late. It is it's a Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett, and my guest today is Tim Falconer from Way Place Foundation. He's the founder. Also, the director of MMRC is Nancy Murdoch. So, guys, I appreciate you come on the show. For my listeners, you know what? Even if it's not going towards, you know, you want to donate, whether it's services or it's or supplies or money, there's plenty of nonprofits that you could donate to. Nancy, let's get all that contact information from you, and so the listeners can check you guys out. I know they can tap off of our website, but give them yours.
Well, ours is mmrcglobal.org. We're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we're on YouTube. We always need money. As wonderful as the Garden Fresh partnership and Jack Aronson partnership has been, you know, we still need to be funded on an ongoing basis. Also, 100% of your donation goes to program costs. We don't take salaries at MMRC. You can reach me or BP or LP through the website, and we do regular blog posts and photographs of what we're doing in Haiti.
Tim?
Waveplace.org. And we are also on Twitter and Facebook and YouTube. You can go to youtube.com/waveplace and see a lot of our videos that show our pilots. Like she said, we can always use money.
Yeah.
You know, there's an interesting figure out. I think it was Katie McKenna said that last year worldwide raised more money than ever before. And I think in the last 25 years or 30 years combined. And I think it's because of the social media now. People are getting to see things that, you know, you didn't know existed. And I think it's fabulous. I mean, obviously, it's got some things it's got to work out with security, but you know, again, if you guys need to, you know, check it out, the websites, they're all for hours, the cppems.com website. There's also the comments and questions page for Tim. There was several questions before for you, Tim, and Nancy, I'm sure there'll be some questions for you on this round after we air the program.
I would just like to say, too, for yes. both waveplace.org and mmrcglobal.org, is if you can't afford to donate, if you post a link on your Facebook or if we post a link on either of our Facebook page and you just like it, it goes into your stream. And we've had tremendous success with getting donations that way because it will go viral at some time and it will get to people that can afford to donate. And
that's
so
great.
Like you
that's
said, Chris, social media is really changing. And I don't think people realize even just liking a link of an organization that you support makes it spread.
Yeah, that's I mean, it's very cool. It's again, Nancy, Tim, thanks a bunch.
Thank you, Chris.
Believe me, thank you. We're gonna I think we should make the round robins every couple of every couple of weeks. We get an update, whatever it may be. Thanks again, guys. It's you've been listening to Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett, here every Saturday. It's between 7 and 8 at the Apple, AM 970, talking New York. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Take care.
You've been listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, from CPP Emergency Services and Restoration. You can reach Chris by calling 201-483-8953. And don't forget to tune in every Saturday morning at 7 for the Disaster Recovery Hour, right here on AM 970, The Apple.